Hello, everyone. I'm Drew.
I'm Bailey.
I'm Lacey.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister. Now, this was supposed to be Lacey's episode, but she has just been so busy with work.
Lazy
and the kids
fucked up,
and you know, cleaning the house and all that stuff.
Jet setting,
right, Lacey? You've got
I have such a busy social calendar.
Yeah,
we had to schedule this recording like 2 months in advance.
You're still lucky I'm here.
I'm trying to publicly.
I have so
shame
much
her.
Going on in my life at this exact moment.
You're publicly shaming a new mom.
I'm going to be an actual mess when school starts up.
She's a mom for 3 months, so...
Yeah, I'm still figuring out how to do it.
Yeah. Have you tried
3 months
any...
today!
Yeah, I know.
We took her pictures like an hour ago. We actually did them on the day of, I think, for the first time.
Really on top of things.
Her 2 month pictures, we were like a week late. She was a different person at that point.
She's a different size.
I've been, speaking of children, I've been seeing these TikToks recently that I'm very interested in, where it's two girls, two women, but they do something to their appearance to make them seem like toddlers. Like, they give themselves weird pigtails. Lacey's seen it. And then they read Am I the Asshole stories.
They pretend they're doing a podcast.
As children.
As toddlers.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
I saw
it's
one like am I the asshole
can,
for...
I'm sorry.
You were doing this.
She says, am I the asshole?
She's unprepared for her episode.
And then she's trying to take my thunder.
I have been on TikTok.
Yeah.
You couldn't finish your episode, but you've been on TikTok.
I certainly have been on TikTok.
I really love the part today when she was like sending us her Wordle score and her Betweenal score, and then she's like, actually, I'm not ready for tonight.
When I sent the Betweenal, I was like, I'm going to be feeling real dick in a couple minutes. We'll see, I'm not ready with my episode.
Yep. Yesterday I was talking to her, and she was like, I can't do any like research because I'm nap trapped by my baby, and I was like, you have your phone in your hand right now.
I was reading, like I know about my case.
It means that you're trapped because the baby is napping on you.
Right now, she will only nap if we hold her. And I did go through a thing for like 2 weeks there where I was putting her down anyway, and then when she woke up, I was like, well, whatever, she didn't nap, and our nights were horrendous. And Drew was actually Brandon was like, I think she's overtired. And then Drew was like, I agree with Brandon. So we went back to holding her for her naps, and then she naps well. And then her nights are not horrendous. So then I'm torn between, like, I feel like I could be doing other things. And then she's so cute and cozy.
Yeah, Lacey, enjoy this time, because in like 6 months, she's not going to want to be... Yeah. Napping with you. She's going to want to run around. Anyway, these two women pretend they're toddlers, and they say, am I the asshole for throwing myself on the ground because my dad gave me the blue plate instead of the yellow plate?
I mean, blue is better.
Yeah, and that's kind of what the other girl would respond, be like, okay, valid. So, that's what I'm interested in. All right, let's get into some true crime stuff.
Let's.
I texted you guys today about the P. Diddy trial.
Yeah.
Not surprising, but disappointing.
Yeah. I think that the jury kind of felt that it was more like, from what the news was saying, it sounds like the defense made the jury believe that it wasn't like sex trafficking. It was like a swingers lifestyle. And she was like consenting to it.
There's so much weird shit that came out in that trial, and so much stuff that like isn't illegal, but was like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, it should be. Feels like it should be.
Yes, things that aren't illegal, but like maybe we should revisit.
Yeah.
I mean, at the same time, like it's. I feel like you said he's getting 10 years.
No. Based on like what he was found guilty of.
Yeah.
The maximum sentence is 10 years.
Okay. I mean, he's still, like, is gonna be, like...
Still gonna serve some time.
Yeah, and also, like, it's a whole, like, trial by, like, public opinion type thing, like, with OJ, like...
Everybody has strong feelings about him now. Yeah.
I also, don't doesn't know... Doesn't
he look terrible after being in prison for a little bit?
Well, the drawings are not doing him any favors. The courtroom drawings look terrible. But, I don't know. I feel like he's probably going to be sentenced to, like, I don't know. What's the thing where you have an ankle bracelet on, you can't leave your house?
House arrest?
House arrest.
Yeah, that.
Oh, that would be annoying. But that would also be, I could see
that happening. Is that really a prison sentence, though? Because, like, does, like, I assume he has mansions.
Yeah.
How do you choose a house? If you have multiple houses for house arrest, do you get to, like,
the house?
Do you get to, like, split time between them, or like,
well, you have to have an address on your driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
So true. I would think that that would be the one. But what would be really cool is if they were like, you're on house arrest, but you're only allowed to access this certain space. Like
no amenities, no basketball court, no bowling alley.
Yeah, but you know, how, to like,
the West Wing.
My experience with house arrest is mostly from the movie Disturbia, where he couldn't remember when he couldn't get the newspaper because it was past the boundary.
Yes.
So it would be really nice if it was like he's only got like a 50-foot radius or the alarm will sound. And knowing that his house is probably bigger than 50 feet, he's basically sequestered to like the West Wing, as Lacey said.
Funny enough, for house arrest. So I'm currently watching the third season of Ginny and Georgia.
Okay.
Which, if you haven't seen any bits of it, it's actually really interesting and funny. Strongly recommend. But there's a bit, someone's under house arrest and her ankle monitor was going off. And I didn't realize you have to like plug them into a wall outlet to charge them.
Oh.
So it just looks ridiculous that she's just like charging herself.
I didn't know that either.
That's that either. What is Lacey? Are you scrapbooking? What are you doing?
She's doing her planner.
It's a calendar.
Oh,
hold it up.
Interesting. You can do that, but
hey,
you can't.
Hey, that's what we got you.
Yeah, it sits at my desk, and every time I sit here, I remember it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I should do that later, and then I forget till the next time I sit here. I'm just putting some stickers in.
Okay. You know what I do?
Hmm.
I have an app, or not an app, I have like a Google Doc on my phone, so anytime I need to add something, I'll just put it on there with the date.
Yeah. I've been putting stuff in my notes app.
Yeah.
And I want to put it in the calendar.
And my last update for True Crime, I texted you guys about it today, but Karen Reed has signed over the rights to her story.
Good. I hope she makes a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Like a goofy amount of money, I hope.
And I think like they were trying to like guess who would play her in the movie. And I think the first person they suggested was like Jennifer Aniston.
Saw something that she, so you know Jeanette McCurdy, the girl from like iCarly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know the book she came out with about her mom?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw something that they're adapting that to like a TV show or something, and Aniston's supposed to play her mom.
Is Aniston just doing everything right now?
I mean, she's amazing. She can do whatever she wants.
She can do whatever she wants.
Truly someone that's never done anything wrong.
No, I can't say that she has. Not that I'm aware.
I knocked on the wood for us.
She's made it like 50 years without doing anything wrong. I don't think she's going to do a sudden turn.
Bill Cosby.
He didn't just wake up one day and decide to be terrible.
No, I know, but I'm saying I feel like everybody.
Oh, it might like come out.
Find something out. Yeah.
I don't.
There
think
are certain Jennifer people that I'm like, please, please don't. Please don't let there be a thing.
She's yeah. Older. There are definitely people that I would be disappointed to find out.
Some but, stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That being said, going along with the Karen Reed theme of, you know, police being just super good.
What was your metaphor last week? Like Blue Shield or something?
It's not mine. It's a common thing. The blue wall of silence.
That's what it was. Yeah, but we liked it.
I know, but it's stopped giving. It's not me.
Is it trademarked?
Probably.
Oh.
No, it's probably not trademarked because it's not like a thing that people are supposed to know about. It's like the Illuminati type vibe.
Mm.
It's a thing that you know about that you're not supposed to talk about. Like Fight Club.
Oh.
Lacey is loving my analogies.
I mean, you're doing a great job.
Thank you. Okay, so shall we jump into it?
I mean, we're 16 minutes into this recording, so
But we did spend like 7 minutes talking about nonsense before I even did the intro.
That's
so
true.
I'm planning on cutting that out.
You're gonna cut the John Cena thing?
Or relocate it to the end of the episode. I don't know.
Wow.
It's a lot of dialogue in the very beginning. Where am I supposed to put the theme song?
I don't appreciate you censoring me.
Not censoring, just editing. Removing. Deleting you from existence.
Lacey?
I'm going to delete you, all your audio.
It's going to be more boring in here then.
It's going to be really weird. It's going to sound...
Yeah. I'm going to sound a little crazy.
Yep. Weird pockets of chatter. Anyway.
Yeah.
Can I talk now?
Is someone stopping you?
Yeah. On February 4th, 2021, 23-year-old Sandra Birch... What?
Recent. It's a recent one.
Yes.
Lacey, stop cutting her off. You're ruining her flow.
23-year-old Sandra Birchmore was found dead in her Canton, Massachusetts apartment. Does Canton, Massachusetts sound familiar?
No.
Yes, but I don't know why.
Okay, so Karen Reed, not even allegedly anymore, she did not kill her husband, or not her husband. She did boyfriend. Not kill her boyfriend in Canton, Massachusetts.
Ooh.
So.
Same police force?
John O'Keefe worked for the Boston Police Department, but the Albert family, Brian Albert, who owned the house where John died,
mm-hmm.
He worked for Canton PD.
Okay.
So this is going to kind of just, this case was brought to light from the John O'Keefe trial becoming more nationally recognized.
Okay.
Because it kind of goes to a weird pattern that seems to be present with Massachusetts police.
Okay.
Okay. Sandra was born May 13th, 1997 in Stoughton, Massachusetts. Sandra, what? Bailey made a faith. Yes. Bailey, nope, not Bailey. Sandra was raised without a father, solely by her mother, Denise. When Denise's health began to deteriorate, Denise leaned on her family to help with Sandra. Sandra spent a lot of her childhood with her great uncle and aunt, Claire and Gerald Godot, or Godet, as well as her grandmother, Grace. Sandra was treated with love by all four of her parental figures. She had, by all accounts, a stable and nurturing environment. When Sandra was around 12 or 13 years old, she joined the Stoughton Police Explorers Youth Program because she admired law enforcement. The program ran roughly from 1999 to 2016. It was managed by Deputy Chief Robert Devine. The program was a 10-week mock police academy with sessions twice a week and ride-alongs. The curriculum included physical fitness, CPR training, self-defense classes, criminal law, crime scene investigation, canine demonstrations, bomb suit demonstrations, and other law enforcement skills. It sounds cool. The goals of the program were to provide the youth with mentors, as well as show them what it would be like to work in law enforcement and help them gain skills like CPR and self-defense.
Okay.
At the start of the program, twin brothers Matthew and William Farwell joined the Police Explorers program when they were both 12 years old, obviously because they're twins. The brothers were born in October 1985 in Norwood, Massachusetts. As teenagers, the twins were caught impersonating police officers and pulled over vehicles. So not great.
No.
But no immediate criminal charges were filed against them. Instead, the matter was addressed internally within the Stoughton Police Department. William was reportedly counseled by another officer and by Robert Devine, the leader of the Police Explorers program. Both brothers dropped out of school in the 11th grade. Matthew, due to attendance issues, and I don't know why William dropped out, but they seem to be doing everything together, so.
Friends.
Yeah. Both brothers later received their GEDs, and both brothers later enlisted in the Army. Both served from 2004 to 2008 as explosive ordnance disposal technicians. Matthew was deployed to Afghanistan in 2006 for 6 months, while William was deployed to Kosovo.
Where's that?
I'm so glad you asked, because I didn't know either, so I looked it up. It's a European country located near Bulgaria, Serbia, and, like, Greece.
What's it called?
Kosovo. K-O-S-O-V-O.
Is that a newer country?
No, because William was deployed there in, like, 2006.
That's okay.
So it's at least 20 years old. Why don't you Google it? You're on your phone. After his military service, William continued his involvement in explosives and bomb disposal until 2014, when he was offered a job as a patrol officer. He attended the Massachusetts State Police Academy, then got a job with the Stoughton Police Department in 2017. Matthew worked for the Wellesley Police Department from 2008 through early 2012. He joined the Stoughton PD in 2012 and served as an instructor in the Stoughton Police Explorers Youth Program. This is where Matthew met Sandra Birchmore. In 2012, Sandra was 15 and Matthew was 27.
Oh, no.
We don't know that yet, but also...
That's true. I guess we don't actually know. Okay, continue. Sounding. Tell us if we should...
Matthew served as Sandra's mentor, helping her with schoolwork and befriending her on Facebook.
Okay.
They began communicating and built a personal connection, and Sandra really trusted him. Matthew portrayed himself as her protector, while also remaining an authority figure. He pressured Sandra to keep their communication secret through the use of threats, manipulation, and emotional coercion.
Yeah. See, if it's not an icky thing, you don't need to keep it secret.
In April 2013, just before Sandra turned 16, their relationship became sexual.
Ew.
Sandra began using a journal describing her relationship with Matthew. Her entries, real quick, just side note, I know it's not a relationship in that she's not old enough to consent. I'm just using relationship to describe the way that these two people interact.
Yeah.
Want to make that clear to the listeners.
Yeah.
Her entries from 2013 detail a continuous and sometimes violent sexual relationship with Matthew. According to her journal entries, Matthew would engage in forceful sex acts to punish her for her mistakes, such as getting bad grades and failing to share her cell phone location with him.
Ew.
My bad.
Yeah, it sounds like it's so weird. Like, she got bad grades, punish her with forceful sex acts. Yeah. She forgot, she didn't share her cell phone location. Forceful sex acts. It's like a weird, like, I want you to do good in school, but also, like, I need to know where you are at all times.
Yeah. It feels like it was just kind of like an excuse to do forceful sex acts on her.
Just anything that she did.
Yeah.
It was bad.
Yeah. Oh, you breathed the wrong direction. Forceful sex acts.
I like that we keep using that instead of rape. Anyway, this relationship continued over the years, becoming increasingly more abusive. Around the same time that their relationship became sexual, in May 2013, Matthew married Michelle Chisholm. So he's got a new wife at the same time that he's having sex with a 16-year-old.
I mean, that could stop.
About 3 years later, in 2016, Sandra's mother suffered a stroke and died, followed shortly by her great aunt Claire in June.
Oh.
Yeah.
She still has her uncle, though, right?
She still has her uncle and her grandmother. This left Sandra depressed and emotionally vulnerable, something Matthew took advantage of.
Of course he did.
Despite this, Sandra excelled academically. She earned an associate's degree in criminal justice from a community college. She decorated her graduation cap with yellow police tape and the words "case closed," symbolizing her commitment to a career in law enforcement. After graduation, Sandra enrolled in nursing courses at another community college and worked as a teacher's assistant in an elementary school in Sharon, Massachusetts. So I don't really, she just like seemed to have her hand in a lot of different pots.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a saying.
She's figuring it out. She's young.
Yeah, she's young. She's, yeah. In February 2019, Sandra and Matthew spoke often via text messages. They enjoyed reminiscing over the moment Matthew had taken her virginity. Yeah, that's the face I made too. This conversation would later reveal the deep psychological grip he had on her. Sandra expressed happiness that he was her first, and Matthew relished in the significance of the act. As the year progressed, however, Matt started getting more and more paranoid. He'd urge Sandra to delete text messages and Facebook conversations. It's almost as if he knew what he was doing was wrong.
What?
In the fall of 2019, Sandra went to an animal shelter with the intention of adopting a cat. There, she met Joshua Heal. Joshua was the Stoughton Animal Control Officer from 2015 to 2020. So, another adult male. After leaving that role, Joshua became an officer with the Abington Police Department. Born in 1979, Joshua was around 40 years old when he and Sandra met and became friends, later engaging in consensual sex. Lacey's not paying attention. She's looking at pictures.
Gross. Everything's gross here.
What did I just say?
Consensual sex.
With who?
And I don't think it was.
With who?
With who?
I don't know. I lost track.
The 40-year-old.
Joshua. Yeah.
Gross.
Animal control, man. Some of us are paying attention.
Thank you, Bailey.
You're welcome.
And in 2019, how old was she? How old were you in 2019, Bailey?
22? Was she 97?
Yeah.
22?
Okay, so she's like 21. That makes sense because she died in 2021 and she was 23. Okay.
18? Wait, hold on.
She was 21.
Okay.
She also confided in him about the relationship she had with Matthew. A year later, Joshua was the one who told Sandra that Matt's wife was pregnant with their third child.
That's a lot of kids.
Yeah, especially when you're having a relationship or an affair with a much younger girl. It was this time when Sandra told Joshua she was going to tell Matthew's wife about the relationship.
Do it.
She even drafted a message to Michelle, sending it first to Joshua to proofread. It said, quote, I'm just messaging you to inform you that your husband, Matthew, has been cheating on you since before you guys were even married. Instead, allegedly, Sandra went to Matthew. She allegedly blackmailed him into impregnating her. Basically saying, like, I'll tell your wife unless you put a baby in me. According to Matthew. Mm. And he agreed.
Yeah, he feels trustworthy like that.
Yeah. Well, he's a police officer, Bailey, so. In December 2020, Sandra became pregnant. Allegedly, Matthew reacted violently upon learning about the pregnancy, including physically restraining her and expressing wishes that she would die. In early January, Sandra called Joshua and told him that after telling Matt about the baby, Matthew said that he wished that she would just die and he wants nothing to do with the baby. Sandra told Joshua that Matt had put her in a headlock and grabbed her phone from her hand. Joshua advised Sandra to distance herself from Matt, given that he was clearly dangerous, a police officer, and obviously didn't care about the law.
Hmm.
Here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
This is no judgment on her, but if she's sleeping with two men, how does she know it's not Joshua's baby?
Maybe she timed it. Or maybe when she was ovulating, she only slept with him and, like, made Joshua wait a couple weeks kind of thing. I don't know.
That's a good point, Bailey, and we'll come back to it.
Okay.
Oh.
A friend of Sandra's reported, I was making a face at you, Bailey, but I realized that you can't see me. Yeah.
Was it a friend, like,
of Sandra's?
You're jumping ahead face?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
So apparently what happened was, like, Sandra owed her friend money and her friend was getting sick of, like, saying, pay me back.
Yeah.
So she called the Stoughton Police Department in January 2021 and was like, hey, one of your officers is having a gross affair with a child, even though Sandra is technically an adult now. Shortly thereafter, a Stoughton Police Department employee told Matthew about the call. Matthew asked Sandra for a key to her apartment, so Sandra made a copy and gave it to Matthew, and allegedly he began stalking her and casing the apartment. At the end of January, Sandra told a friend that Matthew brought her a ginger ale that she'd asked for, and that he, quote, was coming around to the idea of being a dad.
Why is the ginger ale... So, hold on. Multiple things to unpack there. Why... I feel like the ginger ale topic sentence was so insignificant. But also, he's coming around to being... with the idea of being a dad. He already is a dad.
Yeah, I think that... that ginger ale comment kind of reveals a lot about their relationship up until then, where she's like, she was probably feeling sick from the pregnancy.
Oh.
So he bought her a ginger ale and brought it over. And she took that to mean, like, he's finally coming around to me being pregnant. But then she told her friend that when he came by to drop off the ginger ale, he was behaving weird. Like, he opened her closet door and looked in, and then he went into her bathroom and looked around and then left. And her friend was like, that was weird. And Sandra was like, yeah, it was really weird. On February 4th, 2021, two officers were requested to perform a welfare check on Sandra. She hadn't been at work or heard from for several days. The officers went to Sandra's apartment complex and spoke to the property manager. They were informed that she hadn't heard from Sandra in several days as well, and her apartment number was 3307. At around 11 a.m., the officers knocked at Sandra's door for several minutes with no response. After speaking to their supervisor, the officers confirmed Sandra's vehicle was in the parking lot. The Chevy Cruze still had snow on it and around on and around it, indicating that it hadn't been moved since February 1st, 3 days prior. The property manager provided keys to Sandra's apartment, and the officers entered. They immediately noticed the apartment was disheveled and unkempt, with two house cats running around. Sandra's bedroom door was closed and the lights were off. One officer opened the door and found Sandra seated on the floor, with some sort of ligature secured tightly around her neck. The other end of the ligature was secured to the door handle of the bedroom closet. The officer confirmed that Sandra was deceased through lividity and rigor, and a large pool of dried blood was noted by her mouth. The officers contacted their supervisors and exited the apartment to secure the scene. Investigators arrived, and Sandra's body was turned over to the medical examiner. Her cats, I know that you guys are wondering, were given to animal control. Sandra's cell phone was on the floor, located about 12 inches from her right hand and 6 inches from her bent right knee, and her eyeglasses were found on her bed. She was wearing the same clothing that she wore when she was seen on video entering her apartment on February 1st, 2021 at 5:30 p.m. Sandra's first autopsy was performed by Dr. Maria Del Mar Capo Martinez. The report noted that Sandra's hyoid bone was fractured on the right side and that she suffered from petechial hemorrhage as well as hemorrhage of her left sternothyroid muscle. Lacey is not paying attention at all.
I was. My okay. Baby just woke up and walked by. Well,
she walked by?
She was being carried by.
The death was ruled a suicide by asphyxiation in February 2021. She was determined to be 8 to 10 weeks pregnant.
Gets fractured if you commit suicide.
Bailey, can you stop like pointing out weird things?
Sorry.
And just wait a second.
No, I'm so excited.
On February 5th, Sandra's aunt sent an email to the Canton PD sergeant stating that she was aware that Sandra was pregnant and that the father of the baby was Stoughton Police Officer Matthew Farwell. This information was passed to Massachusetts State Police for further action. Due to the reported relationship between Sandra and Matthew, Stoughton Police opened an internal affairs inquiry. On February 11th, William Farwell was interviewed by the Massachusetts State Police. William, the twin, he said that in 2018, while he was assigned to a paid detail, Sandra approached him and they began to talk about her interest in joining the Army. William Farwell put her in touch with an Army recruiter and Sandra began to contact him regularly. William Farwell admitted during his state police interview that he and Sandra had relations going back about 2 years. So both twins were having sex with this girl.
Ew.
During the interview with Matthew, he told investigators that his relationship with Sandra only began in 2020. So
when she was legal.
And a year prior.
Mm-hmm.
He said that he had gotten drunk one night and met up with Sandra. He said that he'd only had sex with her like 2 to 3 times in total. Matthew admitted to seeing Sandra on February 1st, but his intention was to break up with her. He said that they got into a bit of an argument because he insisted the baby could not be his, but when he left, Sandra was standing in the kitchen. During the investigation, it was uncovered that Matthew had engaged in sexual acts with Sandra while on duty. And after he was notified by a coworker that the relationship was reported, Matthew sent Sandra a series of text messages with expletives, telling her that he thought no one knew about the relationship, that she had no clue how bad this was, and indicating that he does not know if he needs to worry about other disclosures. So he was like, this is fucking terrible. I didn't know anybody knew. And do I have to worry about anybody else fucking saying anything? Also, investigators uncovered that from April 2020 to December 2020, William Farwell, Matt's twin brother, exchanged sexually graphic text messages with Sandra on multiple occasions. These messages included photos and videos of his nude wife, as well as other individuals having sex. So even though it seems William waited till she was legal, still a piece of shit.
Icky.
Yeah. While investigating Sandra's phone and surveillance footage, investigators were able to piece together the events that occurred on February 1st. That afternoon, Sandra began scheduling OB appointments and planning for the official pregnancy announcement. Doesn't sound like she's ready to commit suicide. The last video footage of Sandra was around 5.
Yeah. Lacey, what's wrong?
She's getting sick, it sounds. Mm. The last video footage of Sandra was around 5 p.m. when she went down to the lobby of her apartment building to receive a DoorDash order.
What'd she order?
I don't know. At 9:08 p.m., Matthew sent Sandra a text message.
Did you just stroke?
I had a stroke. Matthew sent Sandra a text message asking whether he could come by for a second. 2 minutes later, she responded, indicating that when he arrived at her apartment, the door would be open for him. At 9:14, security footage showed Matthew entering the apartment. At 9:40, Sandra's phone registered 8 steps. 3 minutes later, Matthew was seen exiting the apartment. After leaving the apartment, Matthew drove 12 miles to Newton Wells Hospital to be with his wife. About 12 hours later, on the morning of February 2nd, Michelle Farwell gave birth to Matthew's third child.
Oh my God. Son.
What a piece of shit. The following
day, Sandra's phone ran out of battery and died. At the end of February 2021, Matthew was put on paid administrative leave. While on leave, he obtained his CDL and started a trucking company called DMJ Transportation. In February 2022, Matthew Farwell resigned from the Stoughton Police Department. A few days later, William and Robert Devine were put on administrative leave. Robert Devine was the one who was in charge of that youth program.
Yeah.
The police continued to investigate, and in doing so, they discovered that Sandra had actually babysat for Matthew's family before her death.
Jesus.
They also uncovered messages on Facebook between Sandra and Marty Riggs. Marty was Robert Devine's alias.
Oh.
Because he was like a deputy chief, he didn't want to put his name out on Facebook, so he had a fake Facebook under the name Marty Riggs. And was messaging Sandra.
Ew.
Did she know that it was him?
Yes.
Okay.
You know how I know? Because the messages included discussions about meeting in his squad car while he was on duty.
Mm.
Robert, aka Marty Riggs, claimed his account had been hacked. In August 2022, William Farwell resigned. And Robert Devine retired from the Stoughton Police Department. Around the same time, Joshua Heal was also placed on administrative leave amid allegations of misconduct. In March 2023, Matthew Farwell was decertified from law enforcement, meaning he would be permanently barred from working in law enforcement.
Oh.
Sandra's family filed a wrongful death lawsuit in December 2022. Against Matthew, as well as William Farwell and Deputy Chief Robert Devine. In the lawsuit, Sandra's family accused all three men of nearly a decade of inappropriate behavior, including grooming and sexual contact.
Correct.
In 2024, so last year, 3 years after Sandra was found dead, Sandra's family hired forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Batten to review the autopsy information to see if he agreed with the previous doctor's findings. He found the same findings as the first doctor, but came to a different conclusion. He concluded that Sandra did not die of suicidal hanging, but strangulation, and therefore homicide. He said the extent of Sandra's injuries, as well as the placement of the ligature found on her body, were among the reasons for his determination. He noted that the hyoid bone fractures rarely, if at all, in suicidal hangings, but does in half of homicidal strangulation of women. Dr. Batten overturned the suicide finding and ruled Sandra's death a homicide. At the same time, as part of the investigation, the government retained Dr. William Smock as an expert to independently review the crime scene photos, autopsy photos, and the medical examiner's autopsy report. So two doctors were looking at the same stuff at the same time. Dr. Smock agreed with Dr. Batten, stating that the fracture of Sandra's hyoid bone was not consistent with the position in which she was found. Sandra was found sitting, consistent with a sitting hanging, also called an incomplete hanging, meaning only partial body weight is applied to the neck ligature. Dr. Smock noted that during the autopsy, a pattern imprint was documented on Sandra's right upper chest. The pattern imprint was the consequence of a buckle or buckles from the ligature strap being forced downward into her chest. When found, the buckle responsible for this imprint was observed just below Sandra's right ear. So it had been, like, moved. The buckle's location was not consistent with where the imprint was. Additionally, Dr. Smock noted areas of skin missing from Sandra's nose. These injuries are commonly seen in cases of suffocation when there's like something over the victim's face and the victim is moving their face back and forth in an effort to breathe. Also, Dr. Smock noted that Sandra's favorite necklace was broken around her neck. To him, that indicated that a struggle took place. Mm. In August 2024, Matthew Farwell was federally indicted for the murder of Sandra Birchmore and staging the scene as a suicide. As of now, Matthew Farwell's trial has not yet begun.
Ooh, this is a current.
Mm-hmm. So that's
I'm where... actually surprised that he was even indicted, because when you told us it was where like the Karen Reed shit happened, and then uh-huh. we hear that it involves a police officer, I was like, oh. So we're going to see another cop in the same area just getting away with murder.
Yeah, but I feel like it just kind of points to a pattern where it seems like those officers think they can just do whatever they want.
Yeah, what the fuck is going on there?
Also, like, they also just feel super, like, super arrogant and dumb with mm-hmm. how blatant they're being with a
right.
young underage girl.
Yeah, and also I'm a little annoyed that it took 3 years to get it ruled a homicide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just to remind you, John O'Keefe was murdered in, I think, 2022. So, like, it kind of shed some light on it.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And I think that's when things started to get revisited. Speaking of John O'Keefe, the murder shed a lot of light on what appears to be reoccurring issues, including procedural errors, overlapping personnel, and questionable initial findings, leading many to become concerned with how certain law enforcement sectors in Norfolk County handle suspicious deaths. In Sandra Birchmore's case, a staged suicide, grooming, and homicide were overlooked until federal authorities intervened. In John O'Keefe's case, improper evidence handling and a flawed investigation prompted an independent audit amid high-profile trial scrutiny. Like Karen Reed and Sandra Birchmore, Kara Knott also had trust in law enforcement that was later exploited, leading to her death. So now I'm going to tell you about Kara.
Tell us.
Real quick. Kara Evelyn, huh?
Sorry. When was it 2024 that you said, what year was it that you said her parents hired their own person to
2024?
It was 2024. I kind of wonder if they had previously thought that there was like nothing that they could do or nobody would believe them or whatever. And then as the Karen Reed trial, the first trial got so much attention yeah. and there was so much scrutiny of the police department. If they were like, you know what, this is the time to monopolize on it.
Yeah.
They're actually like under a microscope right now. People are listening.
Yeah. I mean, definitely possible. I think also because like people, I mean, Sandra was popular. She had friends. Mm-hmm. And so when they started seeing Karen Reed get a ton of attention, I think that they started using TikTok to try and get more attention for Sandra as well. And that, good. I mean, you can't hire your own forensic pathologist for free.
Yeah.
So I didn't look into it, but maybe there was like a GoFundMe or something.
Yeah, something to.
And people were raising money to get Sandra's case looked at again.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that they did.
Mm-hmm. And I hope that everybody gets what they deserve.
Correct.
So, Kara Evelyn Knott was born February 11th, 1966, in Ventura, California. So we're going across the country a bit here.
Okay.
In December 1986, Kara was a 20-year-old student at San Diego State University. She had a lot of energy, ambition, and dreams. She was well known in her hometown as having a contagious laugh and a kind heart. Kara left a lasting impression on everyone she came into contact with, whether it was through her passion for animals or her commitment to volunteering. On December 27th at 9 p.m., or at around 9 p.m., she was going home where she lived with her parents in El Cajon, California. She was driving south on Interstate 15 from her boyfriend's house in Escondido. She never made it home. The following morning, ooh, Kara's family members went out looking for her. At around 6:30 a.m., they found her white Volkswagen parked off the Mercy Road off-ramp. Her keys were in the ignition, the driver's side window was halfway down, and her purse was on the front passenger seat. Officers began searching the area, and about 2 hours later, around 500 feet away from her vehicle, Kara's body was found beneath the Los Pensaquitos Creek Arch Bridge. She was 65 to 75 feet down in a dried ravine near a creek bed. She was fully clothed. An autopsy revealed the cause of death was strangulation with ligature marks encircling her neck, as well as bruises to her head and face. The following day, on the evening of December 29th, 1986, California Highway Patrol officer Craig Allen Pyre was going on a ride along with an NBC news reporter in the back seat and a cameraman in the front passenger seat. They were filming a segment about highway traffic travel safety. Officer Pyre followed his typical patrol route, but as they passed a sign for the Mercy Road exit, he turned to the news team and pointed, saying, "That's where they found the body." As Officer Pyre continued down Interstate 15, he discussed highway travel safety with the news crew. He warned about the dangers of stopping on the highway, emphasizing that once a person leaves their vehicle, they become vulnerable. Quote, "Being a female, you could be raped or robbed. If you're a male, you could be killed." He also cautioned against getting into a stranger's car, noting a running theory that Kara may have entered her killer's vehicle. During the segment, Officer Pyre noticed a car pulled over on the shoulder with its hazard lights on. He saw this as an opportunity to demonstrate real-time highway safety tips. Pulling his cruiser behind the stalled vehicle, he stepped out and gestured for the news crew to follow. Officer Pyre approached the car's passenger side window and asked the driver to step out. The man explained that he had run out of gas, walked to a gas station for fuel, and returned, but his car still would not start. Pyre pointed out on the camera that leaving one's vehicle and walking along the highway was extremely dangerous. The driver shrugged off the warning. He was like, "Okay, well, I already did it, so." Officer Pyre then called for a tow truck, and after assisting the stranded motorist, he and the news crew continued filming. Later that night, Officer Pyre watched the segment as it aired on NBC. To him and the California Highway Patrol, the minute-and-a-half clip had gone well. It covered the key safety points and showed him helping a stranded driver. He thought nothing more of it. However, within an hour of the broadcast, police lines were flooded with calls. Viewers had noticed something shocking in the segment, and they were certain they knew who had killed Karen Knott. Police followed up on the tips, and within 2 weeks, they had enough evidence to arrest Kara's murderer. It turned out that the same person who had murdered Kara had terrorized over 24 women in San Diego. These women had survived their encounters, but they had been held hostage, threatened, and attacked before being released. When they watched the segment, they immediately recognized the man featured in the video. He was their attacker. They also noticed something else. The man on the screen who had attacked them had a fresh cut over his eyebrow. It was discovered that as Kara was driving home, she stopped at a Chevron gas station just 2 miles away from the murder scene. The attendant watched as Kara drove away and noticed a marked California Highway Patrol car make a U-turn to follow Kara. The same vehicle pulled up behind her, flipped on its lights, directing her to pull over at an isolated, unfinished off-ramp. Officer Pryor approached Kara's car under the pretext of a routine traffic stop. Investigators found that this was a habit of Pryor's. Pryor stopped many drivers for various legitimate violations, but most of them were female who were driving alone. They were all of the same age group and physical description as Kara. The women who called to provide tips said he wasn't hostile or violent towards them, but seemed, like, overly friendly, to the point that they were uncomfortable. In some cases, he would gently stroke their hair or shoulders. In addition, several women had made complaints about Pryor before the murder, but these were dismissed because of his positive reputation within the California Highway Patrol. It's believed that Kara did not appreciate Pryor's inappropriate behavior during the traffic stop. During the stop, Kara scratched him, likely in self-defense or in resistance to his behavior. In retaliation, Pryor became violent. He struck Kara repeatedly with his flashlight, then strangled her with a rope, killing her. After disposing of her body, Pryor abandoned her car near the off-ramp. Pryor's positive reputation would not help him in this case. As the investigators began looking into him, they noticed that his logbook showed a lot of inconsistencies. He had backdated and moved around several entries. He inserted a purported traffic stop and related ticket entries at times and locations that, if true, would have placed him away from the Mercy Road off-ramp when Kara vanished. So he, like, made up traffic stops as an alibi. But when followed up on, several motorists who were claimed to have been sighted that night denied ever being stopped. Additionally, rope was found in his patrol car. Rope that, after examination, seemed to match the rope marks from Kara's neck. A distinctive and unusual gold rayon fiber found to have been made using a yellow pigment instead of a dye was found on Kara's dress, and it happened just so randomly, whatever. It just so happened to match a shoulder patch Pryor wore on his CHP uniform. Tire tracks on the bridge showed a car had pulled out hastily, leaving black marks on the pavement. A drop of blood was found on one of Kara's boots, which was found to be consistent with Pryor's blood type. He and the blood type were both AB negative, which is the rarest type. It also contained several genetic markers that also matched Pryor. And unfortunately, they weren't able to do, like, conclusive DNA testing because it was the 80s. Microscopic purple fibers also linked Pryor to Kara's murder. Additionally, witnesses told investigators that within an hour of Kara's murder, Pryor pulled into the Chevron station where he first spotted her. Witnesses said that they saw Pryor speed into the parking lot, get out of his CHP patrol car before going inside the bathroom. They noticed he had fresh, bloody scratches on his face, and he looked disheveled. When questioned, Pyre claimed the scratches on his face were sustained when he fell against a fence in the CHP parking lot. Investigators later determined that the fence was too high to have caused the scratches.
Okay. Oh, I have scratches on my face. Yeah, I fell head first into a fence.
It happens all the time.
And didn't think, like, I didn't instinctually throw my arms up to stop me.
Say that you got into a fight with a cat. I don't know.
That's more believable.
Yeah.
Fuck.
On January 15th, 1987, Craig Pyre was arrested for first-degree murder of Kara Knott. The trial began shortly thereafter, but after 7 days of deliberation, the jury was unable to reach a unanimous verdict. On February 25th, Lacey, settle down. On February 25th, the judge declared a hung jury. Pyre remained free on bail until the second trial. The second trial began over a year later, in May of 1988. Dozens of women testified during this trial, describing Pyre's unnecessary and lengthy traffic stops. They told the court how Pyre would subject them to detailed personal questioning that lasted 10 to 15 minutes or more. Like, he'd be like, do you have a boyfriend? Like, that kind of weird shit. In addition to witness testimony, all the forensic evidence was laid out for the jury, who, on June 22nd, 1988, found Pyre guilty of first-degree murder. In August, he was sentenced to 25 years to life in state prison, with parole eligibility after 17 years. Subsequent parole hearings in 2004, 2008, 2012 all resulted in denials. His next hearing is set for 2027. At some point prior to his first parole hearing, Pyre refused to provide DNA to test against the blood found on Kara. At the hearing, Pyre was asked why he refused, but he also refused to answer. That and his lack of remorse are why the board keeps denying his parole requests. Even with his nearly unblemished prison record at California Men's Colony in San Luis Obispo, he's still getting denied.
Good shit.
I feel like he should continue to be denied based on the fact that, like, there's all these women that, like, are testifying, like, how creepy he was, but they were, like, I don't know, saving, like, face and, like, answering his questions, but this one woman who wouldn't put up with his shit, he violently murdered.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. And just to do that and snap like that, no, you can stay in prison.
His third wife, Karen.
Oh, his third?
Yeah, whom he'd married 18 months before he murdered Kara. She visited him regularly in jail, but in 2007 she divorced him.
Oh, good. At least she finally got there.
Yeah. Maybe she was like, maybe he'll admit it. And then after several years, she was like, you know what? Maybe he just fucking won't. In 1995, the Los Penasquitos Creek Bridge was renamed the Kara Knott Memorial Bridge.
That's nice.
Yeah. Do you think it's interesting that both Sandra and Kara were killed via strangulation?
No, I think it's like, it seems kind of on par for like crime of passion, you know?
That's true. But do you, like, think in Sandra's case it was premeditated?
Who?
Sandra's case? I think it was premeditated because he was, like, scoping out the apartment.
Well, like, I feel like he was probably, like, it seems more like he was looking for, like, another man or something.
Yeah. Oh, I think he was trying to figure out a good door handle to tie her to.
Oh. I mean, like, I'm not saying it, like, I feel like there was some planning, like, I think he knew he had to get rid of her.
I don't think. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot to mention. It was later determined that Matthew was not the father of her baby.
Oh. We found out who it was?
No. There's nothing about that. But I think that at that point in there, I think it started, I don't think that he was ever really like the jealous type. Because he didn't seem to care that she was like with her, his brother.
Did he know?
How could you not?
I mean, she was talking to two other guys. I feel like when you're in that, like, I don't think it has to do with jealousy. I think it would probably be do with like more control.
And I think that at that point,
almost, you know, because he took the time to groom her.
Yeah, I think that at that point in their quote unquote relationship, he was kind of just over her and wanted her to go away. She was becoming a threat to his, like, wife and family type thing. And I think that he was just like, I'm not the dad. You need to leave me alone. And then also she was becoming a threat to his job because somebody had called in and reported the relationship.
That wasn't her fault, though.
No, but he told her to keep everything quiet. And clearly she did not.
No,
I don't think that he was looking for another man. I think he was trying to make up a plan to murder her. And you know what? He is being charged with first degree murder. So I think that other people agree with me too. That's all I have to say about that. Lacey, what do you have to say?
I think that he had planned out how he was going to do it and then was just waiting for the right opportunity to do it. And it happened to be the day that his wife was in labor.
Not just 12 hours before.
Yeah.
Yeah, that part.
I think he had it planned out. I think that he didn't necessarily know well ahead of time when it was going to be, but more of like a, I need to seize the opportunity when it's there kind of thing.
Yeah. It really bothers me that he like murdered somebody and then went to the hospital to welcome his baby.
Well, like my thing is, he's a cop. Mm-hmm. If he like fully planned it out.
Not anymore.
What?
He's not a cop anymore.
Okay, he was.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you think with like all of his like investigative like intelligence and everything and like training that he, you wouldn't find her body? Like, if he fully planned it out.
Okay, Bailey, I would like to point out that John O'Keefe was just thrown on a police officer's front yard. I don't think they're all there.
Mm-hmm. Just because they have the training doesn't mean they're smart.
The coldness of Massachusetts must be freezing their brain. Because, like, allegedly, if John O'Keefe died in Brian Albert's house, they couldn't have put him on a neighbor's yard.
Yeah.
They put him in
just
their
like
own.
Somewhere else between their yard and like his actual house.
Yeah.
He was heavy.
That is probably true. But still, it's just, I think that you're trying to give them more credit.
He also could have figured in the one that we're talking about now, that
Sandra.
Maybe it would have been more suspicious to people if she just up and disappeared versus, you know, I can make it clear that she died and make them think she killed herself.
Yeah.
But
and
if
I
she
think
just
that...
disappears, then there's going to be suspicion on me. Maybe he just thought he could pull off the fake suicide well enough.
I would like to point that out, that it did work for a few years. I think that
he was always on the trail.
Yeah. I think that he tried to, during his interview, when he was saying that he went over there to break up with her, they got in an argument, but then he left her in the kitchen. I think
he was
to be saying
like that tipped her over the edge.
Yeah. He broke up with her and she was so distraught, she killed herself.
Mm.
I think that's kind of what he was trying to play at.
That's my bad. I've been in the mindset of, and like researching a lot of like
good murderers.
Yeah.
Not the shitty cops. Yeah, and then I mean going on to the other one, Kara Knott, he went on TV.
That's what I was gonna, I'm glad you said that because I forgot I was gonna say something about it. How do you've been like harassing women.
Yeah. Maybe he's just of the mindset that it's not harassing.
Maybe he genuinely like had the mentality of like, oh, they like talking to me, they're interested in me, the way that some men can like turn that around in their heads.
Yeah, that's called delusions, Lacey.
Yeah, now that we're talking about it out loud, I feel like he probably did not for a second think, you know, anybody was gonna call. They won't like it. They're gonna tell on me. Yeah.
Well, that also, I'm sure, like being the fact that like he's a highway patrol, like, oh, who's going to like have the guts to like say anything negative about me?
Right.
Also,
like, untouchable. And
who would believe them?
Ew. Also,
I want to point out that he was probably aware that people have called and complained about him, but the fact that his department kept having his back probably gave him a little bit of
He's gross. I don't know why I was picturing him young and handsome.
Oh no,
I really was, and this is not.
Oh, I went the other way. I was thinking like old, short, and gross.
I figured young and handsome, and that's why he felt like he was charming, I guess, is what I was.
Oh, Kara was so pretty.
Mm-hmm.
As for Sandra, it really makes me sad. I feel like she, like,
had kind of, like, a shit life.
And I feel like she was, like, looking for, like,
a father figure?
A father type figure, and these men just, like,
took advantage
of her. Literally all of them took advantage.
I am just, like, finishing your sentence left and right.
It started out of my mind.
It started at the age when a lot of teenagers start dating and stuff, so it, like, fully fucked up her idea of what a good, healthy relationship should
be. What happened with her dad? Do we know?
He was never involved in her life.
And, like, but it's also, like, an age, like, her mom was sick, right?
Yeah, her mom was sick and died when she was, like, 19. Yeah. And, yeah. I mean, she did have her great uncle, but, like, I think that she was at an age where she was looking for someone to be a father figure, and then they just took advantage of her.
And protect her, and
she didn't have her mom, like, strong enough to, like, see the signs and protect her.
Yeah.
So sad. And it seems like, even like when I was reading first and I saw that she like befriended Joshua Heel, I was like, maybe she'll finally have like a nice adult man in her life.
Yeah.
And then it said consensual sex. And I was like, or maybe not.
Yeah.
Can we not just...
Can we just be nice to people? Jesus.
Men and women can be friends, guys. We don't all need to just have sex.
But I don't want to, like, this is not victim blaming, but I'm wondering if Sandra had such a, like, messed up idea of how she is supposed to interact with men based on the grooming that Matthew did.
Oh, right. I'm sure.
Yeah, so.
Because he, like, he started that at, what, like, 15?
Yeah.
Like, he totally, like, skewed, like, as Lacey was saying, like, skewed her idea of love and everything. And that's probably what she thought love was and what she was supposed to look for.
Yeah. But
I don't blame her at all. I just feel very, like, sad for the circumstances that she, like, her life took. And it would have been awesome if there was, like, one good guy that didn't want to take advantage of her. And
I also want to point out that in addition to killing her, he hasn't been found guilty yet. So allegedly, Matthew also killed her baby.
Yes.
And with the way the laws are going, I hope he gets charged with two murders.
Ooh! Yes.
Because the baby is alive. Although I think it might not be in Massachusetts. Because it's...
I hope that it is during his trial.
I mean, if he does get found guilty, it's totally gonna fuck him in the punishment phase.
Yeah. Well, that was sinister.
And we were sarcastic, sort of.
And we hope you keep listening.
This is all I've got.